It's a big privilege to welcome Dr. Guy Preston, who joins us now on the line. He's the Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2014 Ecologic Awards. Dr. Preston, good morning. Welcome to the Green Hour.
Good morning. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your involvement with the Department of Environmental Affairs, your role there, and how long you've been there.
Well, I've been in government for 19 years, almost 20 years. I was Carter Asmal's advisor and set up the Working for Water program in 1995, among other programs, and from that a lot of the other initiatives have been developed. But we moved our programs from water affairs to environmental affairs in 2011. So I guess the correct answer is 3 years.
Yes,
but
yes.
The programs have been going for 19 years.
There's a couple of programs working for the coast, working on waste, people and parks. These are all sort of initiatives that have come out over these last 3 years?
No, they've been going for longer than that. So Environmental Affairs had its own suite of programs that was set up under the banner of the expanded, or what became the Expanded Public Works Program. So most of these programs have been going. We have 14 different programs. As well as a focus on biosecurity that we run. And most of them have been going for the past 12 or so years, going back to Working for Water, which was the original program.
Yes, yes. Well, it's interesting because this morning in our news we heard of water being a national key point and the security of water and the concerns around that. Is there a growing concern regarding the future of our water source?
Well, there has to be. We don't know what's going to happen with climate change, the more episodical rainfall that's going to happen, the changes in the amounts of water rainfall in different areas, and simply human population growth, the development that takes place that will require water. It puts so much more emphasis on us to protect the sources of our water. Our watersheds or catchments,
yes.
Our rivers, and then to see how we use it, so the demand-side management side of water. So, yes, of course, it's a major, major threat for the future of our country.
Well, I think more and more South Africans are becoming aware of the fact that we know of an energy crisis, we're aware of the load shedding, we're starting to become aware of the water crisis through COP17 that started the conversation for many South Africans. And it seems like a lot of what we're doing now is really crisis management, and there's perhaps a growing concern about, is there a long-term plan? I mean, and is this being discussed at national level? I'm sure it is.
Yes, it certainly is, and I don't think it's crisis management. I mean, quite obviously, what's happened with Eskom recently is a crisis, an unforeseen event that took place. But there certainly is planning around this. I think there's still a great deal that can be done around demand side management. So how we get people to use water far more efficiently than we all do. In terms of the protection of our catchments and our rivers, our government has for a long time, in fact, been doing exceptional work. It's just the challenge is huge. The invasive plants, for example, that are spreading in the mountains in the Eastern Cape and Southern Cape, Western Cape parts as well, is a dreadful threat. You know, they're like windmills that are pumping water out of the system. And if we don't get on top of them quickly, when they spread into these mountains, access becomes so difficult. It's so expensive to send teams out into the mountains to clear these things and to have them dangling down cliffs to reach those who otherwise will set seed and continue this invasion of the catchments. So timing is critically important in those factors, and then fire comes in, and fires can then germinate a lot of the seeds of many of these invasive species like pines and hackia.
Yes,
and that starts a whole cycle once again. So we certainly have our work cut out for us.
Yes,
to try to address the threat, particularly of invasives, and then also huge problems with sedimentation, so erosion and siltation that occurs in the catchments of dams and rivers and estuaries, which render them far less supportive as life support systems than they have been in the past.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I know Port Alfred, for example, close to where you're calling from.
Mm.
When I was young, it was a very deep estuary. Now you can walk across the mouth of the Cowie River. So these are also very serious long-term threats to our water security, certainly, but broader than that as well, to our life support systems.
Yeah. Dr. Preston, the growing sense that I get from the community is, well, this is what our leaders of our country, government, should be making decisions to prevent this. And is there not a place at saying, but this is way beyond just our leaders? This is now every South African taking responsibility for the environmental impact of the lifestyle we have chosen here in South Africa.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think people just naturally don't want to be regulated. But I think if people buy into why it is, so if I could give you an example, we've brought out our alien and invasive species regulations. These are pretty tough regulations that say this is what you may or may not have, or more, this is what you may not have on your properties, for example, in terms of plants. It covers animals and microbes as well. You know, we can go with a stick approach, but you'll only have limited success. You know, if we turn that around and we say that something like clamenweed or parthenium, for its scientific name, is this incredible risk to the life and livelihoods of so many South Africans. But if you take farmers, if clamenweed comes in to their areas, the potential for grazing is completely reduced. In parts of Australia, it's been 100% reduction in grazing as a result of this one invasive species coming in. But their impacts on biodiversity, obviously, there are also impacts on human health in terms of skin lesions that occur from being in touch with them, but also respiratory problems. So the message we want to have is that you must help us to avert these things taking hold in the first place, because if they do, we will have more and more cases of abandoned farms because they simply will not be productive, and the cost to contain the invasion will be greater than the value of land.
Yes.
So we really need to work with people to get them to do what's in their own enlightened self-interests.
Yeah.
And that's what's been interesting about the power outages that we've had is that it has led to changes in behavior. You know, the energy uses that we have today are no higher than they were in 2007. And if you look at population growth and economic development and so on that's taken place, that's a remarkable saving that South Africans have made. And these messages that go on TV and the radio and so on, I think are having an impact that people start realizing the cumulative implications of their behavior do have very far-reaching consequences. Yeah. And sure, we need, as government, we need to lead that process, but these are things that we cannot do on our own.
Yeah. I really appreciate that perspective that you're sharing with us there. Before we talk about the Ecologic Awards, I just want to take the liberty to talk about two burning issues that are currently happening in this region. Of course, they are the fracking and the nuclear. And there's a large environmental push from a community. There's NGOs coming up and talking about the environmental impact of these two. Of course, we're very aware of the energy crisis and the need for new energy, and of course there's clean energy as well. We've got wind farms around us. We really are the energy hub of South Africa. The fracking, particularly regarding the water, we know nuclear requires a large amount of water as well. The impact on the environment, is this being discussed at length? You know, is there something that we should be made aware of? Where are we going with these things?
Well, I don't know where we're going with them, to be honest, because I think decision makers need to be put in a position to make informed decisions around the trade-offs that are available. So in the end, there's no such thing as clean. There's cleaner. But everything has its consequences.
Yes.
And coal-fired power stations versus nuclear versus demand side management versus biomass to energy or hydro or whatever, all of them have impacts. Mm-hmm. And I think the question is, what is the mix and what are the costs? And part of that are what are the financial costs that are easy to compile, and what are the costs that we would call the externalities or the social costs, so the things that have consequences but typically are not measured and not taken into account with the way that they should be in decision making. So I think it's a complex process to weigh up fracking, for example, and the costs and benefits associated with that. And part of it also is to always ask the question, well, who benefits and who pays?
Yes.
And I think quite often that question is not asked or answered adequately in decision-making across the world. Hmm. So you tend to have too often a situation of the haves benefiting and the have-nots paying the costs.
Yeah.
The UN had a very neat phrase that it used, or comparison of phrases, many years ago, where they said you have a kind of choice between some for all forever and all for some for now. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what when we do our impact assessments and when our leaders make decisions is to try to get that equity, efficiency, and sustainability in the choices that are made.
Yes.
But they're difficult choices.
Yes.
And they do all come with costs.
That's right.
You can't have a rapidly increasing human population and the enormous inequity that we have in our country still.
Yeah.
So all the figures show, although we've actually improved quite considerably from where we were with the Gini coefficient of the allocation of resources, there's still gross and unacceptable differences in who has and who does not have in our country, and that needs to be redressed.
Mm.
And we also have to ask ourselves, well, to what standards? You know, what is an acceptable level of lifestyle and provision of the basic needs for people?
Wonderful.
So they're complex questions and complex assessments that need to be made to help our decision makers to make the most informed decision that they can.
Yeah, well, the decisions need to be made, and I like what you're saying. The conversations need to be had, the tough conversations as well. Well, Dr. Preston, you were awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2014 Ecologic Awards, recognizing your outstanding work that's been done through these various programs we've been speaking about. Particularly regarding the alien and invasive species and the biosecurity function that you've been providing for the country. Just your thoughts on the awards and receiving this Lifetime Achievement Award. What an honor.
Well, of course, it's an honor, and I'm grateful for that. And I think I said also in receiving the award that no individual does these things on his or her own.
Yes.
And that's certainly the case, yes. So I think the political leadership that we've had in support, starting with Professor Carter Asmal, who really was the person who made it all possible in the beginning, and we started off with a budget of $25 million for the Working for Water program, which Carter prized out of Jane Ivey, the minister for the RDP. Our MTF, our three-year budget now is almost $10
billion. Wow.
We're employing 74,000 people across the country, across the different programs that we run. And we have extraordinary returns on investment for what we're doing. So this isn't make-work at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the two of the examples I gave was They're working on fire program, which is the firefighters that we have across the country fighting wildfires. And in 1 year, the fires were particularly bad in the forestry industry, and they calculated that were it not for the Working on Fire program, the cost to the industry, which they put at 3.7 roughly billion rand, would have been doubled. Wow. Now, at the time, our investment in the program was 123 million. So if you're getting 3.5 billion that's from incredible. Investing 123 million, that's an extraordinary return on investment. That doesn't include all sorts of other benefits that one gets. And then the second one would be the calculation that was done by the CSIR on the value of the clearing of invasive species, which just for three factors, water, and it's only water quantity, not water quality, water quantity, grazing, and biodiversity, they put it 453 billion rand. Now, let me say that we think that those figures are too high, but it's nice that somebody else did it and came up with that kind of calculation. But at the time, we had spent about 11 billion on that work. I mean, there's other biocontrol and work that other people have done as well. But these are extraordinary returns on investment. Wonderful. That if we don't do them, the future consequences are so high. So I think these programs have made and are making a remarkable difference. And I think with the increase now with biosecurity, with the laws and our efforts now to prevent stuff coming into the country in terms of invasives, with all the other programs, the wetlands and the parks and the wildlife economy and all these other programs that we run, I think we are just so much stronger than we've ever been before.
Wonderful.
And we have a wonderful team who are responsible for that. So starting with Minister Molewa, our political head, but throughout the team, you know, it's certainly not Guy Preston.
Yes.
It's a massive team effort that is working.